Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm stand-up comedian James Mullinger and the co-founder of Edit Magazine. This is Mullinger Meets Canadians, the podcast where we meet Canadians who are making waves on the world stage. In this episode, I'm meeting a man that I've been a huge fan of for a very long time. Halifax, Nova Scotia-based filmmaker, fashion designer, keynote speaker, and all-round inspiration, Tyler Simmons. Tyler's award-winning films, keynote speeches, and TED Talks on mental health led to the Huffington Post naming him one of the 10 most inspirational people under 30 that you should be following on Twitter. Acclaimed globally for inspiring and uplifting those of us struggling with mental health issues, he is a guiding light with that rare ability to entertain as he enlightens. As he himself once said, "My main goals are always to entertain, educate, inspire, and motivate." Job done, Tyler. Tyler was born on January the 26th, 1990, and grew up in North Preston. He struggled with his mental health throughout his childhood. His first critically acclaimed short film, In My Mind, looked at mental health in the black community. And the second, There's Soul in Our Soil, examined intergenerational trauma caused by racism. Both are spectacularly insightful and moving, and have won awards at prestigious film festivals around the world. Tyler's message is one that is resonating with people globally. We talked about what people in Atlantic Canada can do more to support black-owned businesses, how to deal with ignorance, the life-saving wonders of meditation, and why cancelling people doesn't work, and that rather than calling them out, we should be calling them in. So settle in and listen up. This is Tyler Simmons. Tyler, it is a great honour to meet you, my friend.
It's great to meet you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no, this is honestly, this is a great honour. I've been a big follower of everything you do. And of course, I mean, you are so many things, a filmmaker, a fashion designer, a keynote speaker, mental health advocate, and many, many more things. So I guess my first question is, how do you describe yourself to people when people ask, what do you do?
Yeah, that's always... That's always hard for me to answer. Usually, yeah. A lot of times I'll just say filmmaker. But really, I just do stuff. I just do stuff that I love, really. Yeah.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. Do stuff you love. I mean, and it definitely feels like that. It feels like all of these things are things that you are passionate about. Nothing that you do is for the sake of it or for the financial rewards. It's passion. So where does that passion come from?
Since I was a kid, I've just always been into the arts and also just finding new ways of expressing myself. I grew up with a lot of social anxiety, so I've tried to find these different avenues of speaking, speaking through film, speaking through the way that I dress, different things like that. And so I figured out that I can basically have a career expressing myself through these different art forms.
Amazing. And of course, I mean, that comes through in everything you do. And some of those things might be understandable to people, like, you know, it's understandable that you would want to make a film about mental health and depression and maybe be able to design clothes and so forth. But how does someone go from having the kind of anxiety that you had growing up to being able to speak on stage in front of thousands of people and not just speak, but inspire and really speak to them, like speak to their hearts and their souls? How did that transition take place between kind of shy and anxious to this powerhouse on stage?
Yeah, I for a long time I was very very hesitant to jump into things like public speaking and even to take filmmaking more seriously and stuff. It was really hard for me. And I tell people a lot that, like, the darkest moment that I had, which was when my depression was at its worst, my anxiety was at its worst, having these thoughts of, oh, I don't even know if I want to be here anymore, and just hitting that rock bottom, I feel like it just sparked something in me that made me feel like, okay, standing in front of 10,000 people or working on a film and putting it out for people to see or just doing the things that I really want to do, they just didn't seem that scary anymore. I still, of course, get anxious about them, but in the way that I think about it is that it's worth it. The risk is always... it's always outweighing the reward in the end.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true. And I know you've said before in interviews, you know, that your goals when you speak is to kind of entertain, educate, inspire, and motivate. What are the things that people say to you after events or indeed people that you meet in the street who've maybe seen your TED Talks and they say how hearing you speak and seeing you speak has kind of changed their outlook? Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite parts of it, because I really got into public speaking for that purpose, to be somebody that people can relate to, that people can look to and say, oh, he's doing this, I can do it too. Just so many people have reached out to me over the years, thanking me, parents thanking me because they now understand mental health more and they can help their children. People reaching out to me saying that that they look up to me and that got them into public speaking, things like that, and got them to start meditating and focusing on mindfulness. And really, that's the goal of it all. I just really want to inject some positivity into the world and improve lives if I can.
It's beautiful. I mean, could you have imagined like what, when you were growing up in North Preston and you know, were having these feelings and these thoughts and obviously didn't know what they meant or indeed what they were or where they had come from, what would you kind of like to say now to that little boy?
What I would say right now, first, I would say you're not crazy, because that little boy, he was, he had big dreams and he wanted what I'm doing now. And but he felt that his anxiety and his depression was holding him back. But that resiliency that I had when I was a kid, it was just a bit out of this world, and I just kept going and going and going and practicing and trying my hardest. I would tell that young boy, just keep going. You're not crazy. It's all going to pay off.
It certainly did. I mean, what do you think, did you in any way get the help that you needed back then? I know you obviously had family support, but did the system support you? And do you think that things have improved now, either in the Maritimes or indeed anywhere in Canada? And if not, like how could things improve for children or indeed anyone in this position?
Yeah, I for a really long time it was really hard for me to find the help that I needed. I had a family doctor, and there were some issues there. I didn't feel like I was receiving the help that I needed. I didn't feel like a lot of the professionals that I was seeing were even looking me in the eye at times when I would go and see them, which was really uncomfortable for me. There were so many professionals that I only saw one time, and I just didn't go back to because I didn't feel like I could trust them. And it took over 5 years for me to find the right support system. And thankfully, I found some really great people. But from what I hear from most people, it's really hard to find the right support for mental health. And we still deal with a lot of things like wait times and the crisis support. It's it can be not what we want it to be. I've had to help people who were in crisis before, and I remember calling the crisis line and me hanging up the phone afterwards and thinking, wow, this is not crisis support. And I think we really need to just work a lot harder on that stuff, especially here in Nova Scotia. And even things like the police force, I feel like there needs to be actual healthcare professionals who go on wellness checks, and because police officers, they're not trained for that. We need to put the real healthcare professionals in the right positions, and that keeps everybody safe, I feel.
Absolutely. I mean, and clearly change is being brought about by speaking about it more, but obviously things are happening slowly. Do you think things happen slower in smaller places like where we live in the Maritimes, and what do you think are the kind of, I guess, what are the good things about living in a smaller and quieter by comparison place, and what are the negative things?
Yeah, I think things definitely move a lot slower here, which can kind of suck at times. But but I think it's really one of the positives of living in the Maritimes is that like my gut tells me that we can really come together, and us being such a small place, we can come together. We can work on these issues together, even though there's a lot of diverse backgrounds. I think that there are so many people now that want to learn more and want to experience different cultures and stuff like that. And I think the majority of people in Nova Scotia, they really want to be better, and they want better for Nova Scotia. So I'm really happy to be here.
No, that's beautifully put. And certainly, I mean, the last 12 months, you know, COVID kind of, you know, took over, but then the Black Lives Matter movement feels like a positive thing that has come out of everything that we've seen the last 12 months. And as you rightly say, it definitely feels like in the Maritimes, there is a feeling now amongst all residents or most residents of the Maritimes that they want to learn more. They want to embrace other cultures. They want to look at parts of history, and especially Black history, that has been ignored over the years and not been taught. And people do seem to want to embrace it, but I'm sure it wasn't like that when you were growing up. How do you feel about that shift? And also, what was it like for you growing up?
Yeah, definitely. Growing up, it was very different. I felt all of these things like injustice happening to my community and feeling misunderstood, and I would just keep it all held inside, which caused a lot of anger, and it was tough just going out into the world and sometimes feeling like an outcast, feeling like, oh, I'm from North Preston, so people aren't going to think that I am able to get this job, and or people are going to think that I'm a bad person because of that. And then getting older and realizing how wrong and messed up that is, and how much that affected me mentally. And then all of this stuff happened at the beginning of COVID, with like the George Floyd incident. And I remember when I opened up my laptop and I saw that, and I saw all of the outrage and everything, and people were sending me DMs and asking me for my opinions and saying sorry to me and all of this stuff. And I was so overwhelmed. I even had to just like turn my phone off for a few hours, because the way that I was thinking, I was like, oh, I've known about this forever. And I've been angry about these things and frustrated and annoyed and trying to navigate them in this world for so long. It took a lot of time for me to just try and understand how I can navigate all of this. And it came back to me doing a lot of meditation and doing a lot of reading and just spending time with myself, in remembering that people, yeah, a lot of people haven't lived my experience, and that doesn't mean that I need to be angry with them. That doesn't mean that I need to continuously be frustrated with them. It was frustrating at first, but I definitely realized that the right way to do this is to have conversations with people and to lead with love and to just have faith that people are starting to understand now, because I really think that people are starting to understand and they want to. And that they care. I'm one of those people who feels that people are generally good people. I think that keeps me sane in this world. Just yeah. Remembering that and knowing that people aren't just ignorant because they want to be ignorant or something. Like, sometimes people just don't know any better.
Well, yeah, that's a really beautiful way of looking at it, because there must be a moment, obviously, where it became, I mean, because it's undeniably frustrating, or it must have felt frustrating when people were getting in touch saying, oh my God, I had no idea that racism existed here in the Maritimes, or I had no idea that things were so bad for you. And you're kind of thinking, really? Like, have you not been, like, how closed have your eyes been? Like, how can you not? And have you not been listening to anything anyone said? Have you not read a newspaper? But it's amazing that you kind of channeled that kind of hearing those kind of patronizing and let's face it, slightly insulting comments, with the fact that clearly these people, for all of their blinkeredness and being blind, they actually do want to learn and want to be better. And I guess kind of how did you kind of reconcile that in your brain?
Yeah, it was hard for me. It took a lot of patience and a lot of self-love. I had to just take a step away from things like social media. I had to take a step away from the like activism work that I was doing. I had to just really be at peace and think about what I really want for the world and what I really believe people to be in general. And there's always going to be those people who are just bad people, but I like to think that those people, they are the minority. And I know a lot of really good, genuine people. And so I had a lot of conversations with friends of mine who are really smart and who do a lot of activism work, and even had talks with like different professors and like lawyers and stuff like that, and just talking, just picking their brain about different things. And I had to understand where the other side was coming from as well, and listen to them. I believe that if I want people to listen to me, I owe it to them to listen to them. And that's just how I feel. Wow. I feel that that's just a common decency thing. That's a respect thing. I'm really big on respect. And if I want people to listen to me, I gotta listen to them and genuinely listen to them, not just listen to respond, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's fascinating because, I mean, everything that's happened in America in the last few years has stemmed from, obviously, from people not listening. And there are people that fall into different camps. I mean, as I'm sure you would have found from these conversations, I mean, the kind of unashamed racist, generally, when you dig deep, what you find under there is fear and insecurity and being, you know, brainwashed by propaganda and lies. But then equally, I mean, as you say, on the other side of that, there are the genuinely bad people who cannot be changed. How do we speak to the people who are kind of in between the people who've been blind for many years and haven't seen what's going on, but now see what's happening and are wanting to do their best, and it sometimes comes out in a patronizing, condescending way, and we can laugh at them, but they mean well. And then you've got the unashamed racists on the other side. What about those people in the middle who have grown up around negative thoughts about people of other religions and other races? How do we get through to those people?
Yeah, I know a good amount of those people, and and definitely the way that I speak with those people is just letting them know I don't see them as just this bad person. I'm not looking at them like, oh, you have this thought, you're a terrible human being. The way that I speak to them is, okay, you have this thought, but let's reevaluate that, or you have this belief, but let's go over that and maybe you'll change your mind about it. And usually they do. Usually they're like, oh, I get it now. And I think that that's how we should approach these situations, instead of having conversations with these people and saying, okay, I'm done with you. I'm never speaking to you again. You're basically doxed. You're basically canceled. I think that the whole cancel culture thing, it doesn't help people heal. It doesn't help people grow. And that's all I'm about. I'm about helping people heal and grow. I think that people can become better, because myself, I've experienced it. There were beliefs that I had growing up, and I can't even believe that I believed those things in the past. So I truly believe that people can grow and change in a genuine way. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. And I mean, I find your, it's interesting because your Twitter feed and all of your social media channels are steeped in positivity and thoughtfulness. But as a whole, I mean, a platform like Twitter is this kind of ridiculous gulf between the most kind of left-wing cancel culture and the most right-wing. And there's never any kind of, I mean, there's no nuance and there's no debate. It's either this person must be canceled or this person, you know, it's this person's Hitler. It's this kind of these two warring factions. How is it that you've managed to kind of create an environment on social media of warmth and inclusivity, and most importantly, reasoned debate, which is so sorely lacking so much of the time?
Yeah, it's I've been on that really far left side before, where I've been like trying to cancel people and just being like, oh, this person's done this, but it's so angry and I'm not at peace that way. And I don't think anybody can be at peace that way. And same with the far right. Like, I don't, like, these people don't seem happy to me. My way of thinking is, okay, let me just want peace and be able to listen to both sides. And people would say that I lean more on the left, but I don't really think of it. I just want what's best for people. It just takes a lot of, I think it takes a lot of just self-awareness in being able to spend that time with yourself and evaluate your beliefs and change the things that you want to change, things like that. That's what made it a bit easier for me to not be kind of controlled by these two extremes that we have going on.
Amazing. I mean, given you are one of the only people I know that has had this kind of, eureka moment of wanting to, you know, call people in and actually listen to them and engage with them. And why aren't politicians doing this? And more importantly, when are you going to run for office? Because we need you. We need to add politician to your list of your already absurdly long list of things you've mastered. Why not politics?
That's a good question. I'm going to say I don't think I will ever be a politician because I know some politicians.
Because you like getting shit done, that's why.
You know what? That's one of the big things. I need to get shit done. And another thing is it's really hard for me to bite my tongue, to like hold back. I would be the politician that people are like, you are not supposed to speak in this way. You are not supposed to call this thing out and be like, oh, we need to have a conversation about this deep issue. Like, you shouldn't be on Twitter talking to different politicians in Nova Scotia. Like, I would probably, yeah, I would cause a few problems, but I would.
But to be fair, those are all things that people said about Donald Trump. So you could be the Donald Trump of reasoned debate.
You know what? I feel like I would be the positive version of Donald Trump here. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. The guy that broke all the rules, but unlike Trump, who basically started Third World War, you could actually bring about world peace with this kind of this new way of doing things.
Yeah, I think that's true. But yeah, I don't think that they would like that. I don't think that other politicians would like that. Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, also nowadays you don't need politics to bring about change. I mean, you're bringing it around through speaking, through fashion, and most importantly, obviously through film. Can you tell me about your latest film project and what it's all about?
Yeah, so I have a film that I did for for Being Black in Canada, the Halifax, Toronto, and Montreal Black Film Festival. It's called The Search for Healing, and it's basically about my life in my community, and I speak with different healthcare professionals who sit down with me, and we talk about mental health in the Black community, and we talk about how mental health in the Black community is unique, and we talk about things like intergenerational trauma and how I am affected by that and how my parents were affected by that. And it's really something that I'm extremely proud of. I took some time off of like the film directing to focus a lot more on like the mental health advocacy and the public speaking. But I feel like this is a project that is going to really show people who I am creatively, and like the content that I can bring into film in a documentary way. So I'm working on that, and then I'm working on another project that I don't think I'm supposed to talk about yet, but it's about I came together with a few amazing people who really want to highlight the good that's happening in Nova Scotia. After everything that's been going on with COVID and with the injustices, and so much negativity that we've been seeing online, we just thought that it's really important to make something that that can make people feel good and help people remember that there are people out there that really want to make a difference in the world and are actively doing this really good work to help others.
Amazing. And do you feel like in Nova Scotia and indeed the Maritimes as a whole, you know, I mean, certainly for me as someone who's moved here from away, I feel there is an abundance of people here that do care more so than I ever felt in England. Is that something that you feel, and how can other places kind of nurture what we have here?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely feel that we have this thing about us in Nova Scotia, and I feel like it's unique. It's something that we should really be proud of. It's one of the main reasons why I'm able to believe that most people are good people and they want what's good. And even those people who may say ignorant things at times and they let us down at times, I feel like at the core, they do want to do what's best. Sometimes they just don't have the right information. They don't have the right people around them at times. but I think that definitely in general in Nova Scotia, we really we want to be better, and we want to look out for one another. I always see it. I see people donating to others who are in need. People are just protecting each other, and it's beautiful to see. I love that about Nova Scotia.
It really is a unique place in that way. And what do you think that people here who are taking note of what's happening in the world and want to support more? What can people do, for example, to support more Black-owned businesses? What can people do more to really kind of bring about the change that they claim to want so much?
I think it's really important to just think about the roles we play in society. People who are white people, I think it's important for them to just think about the different privileges that they have that maybe a Black person wouldn't have. Thinking about these things and being accountable and not feeling ashamed, because I don't feel that shame is going to help any of us. I think just sitting with these things and thinking, okay, maybe I was ignorant about this, or maybe I was misinformed about this, and you know what? That's okay. We mess up. Now it's time for me to change the way that I look at this and support those who, the people of color, the Indigenous community, the Black community. I think it's one thing I think is really cool is when I actually made these t-shirts, and the amount of people who were white that reached out to me and were like, oh, I want to buy this. And they bought so many of them. It was mind-blowing. But doing things like that and supporting people in that way, I think that really shows that you care. And also just listening. instead of trying to challenge everything, just listening and taking things in, and trying to educate yourself, so important.
Wise words, and so beautifully put. I'd say it's a miracle we've managed to go 40 minutes without talking about COVID. This is the longest I've gone without talking about COVID for a year. So this is a very nice feeling. But I have to ask, I mean, I know you've always have so many projects on the go, and I know lots of things like, you know, working on films and so forth, you probably were able to do. Did you kind of pivot into doing virtual speaking engagements? And if so, how did you find that?
Yeah, I had to pivot into doing virtual speaking engagements, and not gonna lie, it's a bit weird, not being able to see the faces of the crowd and stuff like that. It's really hard because I don't know, a lot of times I feed off the energy of the crowd, and I don't go into a speaking engagement with this just a script that I go off of. I try to read the room. I try to have sometimes I even try to just talk to a specific person about something, but it's different. But I'm grateful that I'm able to still do it virtually. I'm really hoping that in the near future I'm able to do it in person again, but yeah, I don't want to complain about it because it's still happening. I'm still getting work, so I'm happy about that.
Well, honestly, I can't thank you enough for your time this morning, and it's just been such a great honor to finally meet you. And of course, in classic maritime fashion, you know, after I got in touch with you, we of course realized how many connections we have. Of course, I'm good friends with your cousin, Chadwick Williams. Only in the Maritimes does this happen, where you reach out to someone to tell them how much you admire them, and then it turns out that there's about 10 connections, like one degree of separation between us.
Yeah, it's so cool how we have so many people in common.
And like I say, I'm a big fan, and I'm going to keep following everything you do and just keep doing it. Lots of love, and thank you so much for your time this morning. Really appreciate it, Tyler.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Mullinger Meets Canadians. If you like greatness, creativity, being inspired, laughing, or just love Canada as much as I do, then this is the podcast for you. So please do subscribe and review the show now. And be sure to follow Tyler on Twitter, @TylerSimmons, and on Instagram, @TheTylerSimmons. Check out his website at tylersimmons.com to purchase clothing from his fashion label. I'm sitting here right now wearing one of his awesome t-shirts that says, "Art Saved My Life." Further details can be found on the Edit's website, maritimeedit.com, and I will see you next time.
Podstarter.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.